trusted voice of truth and light.
God gave me a gift. I shovel well. I shovel very well.
And a rally point for those who've accepted the reality that they are not sheep.
We've got a blind date with destiny.
And it looks like she's ordered the lobster.
This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Well, hello there and welcome to the show. This program is not about giving you the talking points, which you can then go forth and dutifully regurgitate for anybody within earshot. No, I like to take a little bit different approach. It's not that I have all the answers, but man, I have access to some tremendous resources for wrong thinkers. And I literally spend my day looking for the best information, the most credible and principle-based information I can find, and then sharing it with you. And what you do with that information, well, that is entirely up to you. Because I'm not here to tell you what to think. I'm just here to encourage you to think as clearly and independently as possible. And that means question everything, including whatever I happen to be sharing with you. With that in mind, I've got some great sponsors that make this possible on a daily basis. They include Dixie Chiropractic, HSLAmmo.com, SewingAndQuiltingCenter.com, MonticelloCollege.org, LifesavingFood.com, and the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage. Where to begin? Just kind of a quick recap of some of the things, or I guess a preview of the things we're going to be covering in this hour of the show. We're going to talk about turning off the story that's playing in our minds. I'll get to that one in just a moment. Also want to spend a little bit of time about how the strangest thing today is how often and how many ways we're expected to deny reality. Got a great one from the Good Citizen Substack that I think you're going to really like. Also, the collapse of trust in our society. It's going on. It's real. What exactly does it mean? What does it portend for our relationship to the ruling class? And last but not least, when I want a very serious, no-crap assessment of what's going on, James Howard Kunstler is an excellent resource. He's got a great take and actually some pretty good advice on some of the things that we could be doing. He's exploring solutions, as we all should be. Let's start, though, with Paul Rosenberg's latest. He says, it's a good idea to turn off the story in our minds. And I know for some people that's not going to make a whole lot of sense, but the title here is, For Important Decisions, Turn Off the Story. Paul Rosenberg says, humans have a complicated relationship with the stories they tell themselves. Sometimes they tell themselves stories to practice real-life situations. Sometimes they go through I-should-have-said scenarios to either improve or to wallow in their misery. And sometimes they tell themselves lies to make themselves feel better about something. And, of course, there are almost infinite variations. Now, he says, I'm aware that I don't fully understand this subject. I don't think anyone does. But I know we do these things. I can point to beneficial instances and harmful instances, but I definitely don't understand everything that lies behind them. That said, Paul Rosenberg writes, I know enough to discuss certain instances of self-stories, and one of those is the clash between our stories and our choices. So one of the most common types of human problems occurs when we knew that we were about to make a mistake, but we did it anyway. I think we've all experienced this. If I could just give this as an aside, yelling at my kids. I know it's unproductive. I know it's harmful. It's doing nothing except just yelling, venting. But did I do it anyway? Yeah. Why? Well, I don't know. Even though I knew it was wrong, even though I was sure this is not what I should be doing, it felt good at the moment. Yeah, I'm not happy about that, by the way. I'm actually pretty ashamed. But that's an example of it. Now, Paul Rosenberg says, fundamentally, the problem in these cases is mental inertia, that we've already started moving in a certain direction and somehow can't let ourselves be stopped. Now, one interesting thing about these processes is that our initial actions or our commitment to those actions not only want to continue, but somehow diminishes the realization that we do better by changing them. In other words, somehow our brains obscure inputs that go against our existing movements that threaten our inertia. And he says, I hope I'm making this clear. Well, these are universal experiences. They're all so murky and we don't really have a vocabulary that suits them. So a first problem is that our thought streams do not like to be interrupted. Now, perhaps that has something to do with energy consumption. Perhaps it has to do with disliking self-contradiction. Or perhaps it's something else, even a palette of things. In any event, this is something that happens to us. It's what happens next that is his subject. And that is justifying actions already in motion with concurrent stories. In other words, the story is what makes it okay. This is how we justify doing the wrong thing, even though we know it's wrong. So he says, let's follow the progress of, I kind of knew, but I did it anyway, mistakes. We made a commitment to something and initiated it. We perceive, perhaps mutedly, that we should probably stop. Our ongoing stream of action doesn't want to be interrupted. Now he says, I'm speaking metaphorically because I just don't know a better way to do this. At this point, we are back to reasoning rather than observing and reacting. Now he says, in my experience, there's still some inertia and muting going on, but at least we're referring to reason and trying to decide whether to continue the action or stop it. He says, usually one part of us really wants to continue the first action, but another part is demanding to consider it first. And this is the part, or this is the point, rather, where the story plays its role. More than likely, there was some type of story or narrative running while we made the initial choice. And he says, more likely, it's still running in the back of our heads. So when we begin questioning the inertia of the original choice, the story, to use a pro wrestling metaphor, jumps into the ring and fights alongside its partner. If then reason must face off against not only inertia, but inertia's partner also, reason usually gets tossed out of the ring. And thus most of us experience a long string of mistakes of this type. So how do we fix it? All right, this is where it gets interesting. He says the first and fastest fix for this is the title of this post. Once you sense this process inside yourself, stop and turn off the story. It's competing unfairly. Cry foul and direct it out of the ring. Now he says the crucial part is that is to recognize our inner processes. And this is clearly not something beyond our ability. If you recognize this type of error, you're already recognizing such things. But getting better at this would help us quite a bit. It further seems that once you can say, no story, not fair, the entire inertia issue goes away, leaving you to reason freely. So that's the first fix, he says, and it works. It'll probably train your inner processes to become more agile. Now he says, I can't be certain about that, but that's how it seems to him. That's probably the best we can do with this right now. Someday some young psychologist will make a study of this and clarify it for us, but after that we'll be able to deal with it more intelligently and directly. But even now we have the ability to stop much of the damage. We notice what's going on, tell the story that piling on isn't fair, and to leave the ring. And then make undisturbed choices, at the same time teaching our inner parts to get in touch with, to get with the new program rather as well. Now finally, he says, I should add that first turn off the story can apply very broadly. Again, going back to the post's title. When making a hard decision, what he means is making sure that there's not a story playing in the background and affecting your choice. Notice the story that's running and turn it off. Make the decision clearly. And he says, I'm convinced this could save you piles of trouble. I'll admit, I recognize what he's saying, but I have never given it serious thought and contemplation like, oh yeah, you know, this is something I've thought about myself. No, it wasn't until he pointed it out that I realized, oh yeah, I do that. In fact, I've done that a lot. But rather than sit here and wallow in, oh, the shame, it shows me, okay, there's an area for self-improvement. I think we get really used to the narrative that's running in our heads, right? We're all kind of the star of our own lives, and we have a story, and hopefully, you know, there's a heroic aspect to it. I mean, in some cases, that can get built up to delusional proportions, but for the most part, I think we're really trying to tell a good, honest story, and that narrative running in our heads is trying to tell us, no, you're right, you're on the right path. But every so often, usually it's in hindsight, I'll sit back and realize, you know, in retrospect, I really wish I had done things differently. And I probably would have done things differently had I just made the story stop and questioned what I was about to do. And for the record, You know what the most common thing is that I would have done differently? Maybe this will surprise you, maybe it won't. I would have shut up. I would have said nothing. So that's how I see it. Thank you, Paul Rosenberg, for pointing out something that I'm going to definitely be thinking about and paying attention to in my own life. Now, whether you do this, that's up to you. I've got a link to his article in my show notes. You can find it at thebrianhydeshow.com. If you haven't subscribed to my show notes, it's a simple matter of go to my website, thebrianhydeshow.com, click on the daily show notes. Down at the bottom of the page, you'll see the subscribe button. It's going to ask for your email, which I will not share and I will not sell to anybody else. I will only use it to drop a copy into your inbox each day that I do the program. Oh, and it's free of charge. Can't beat the price.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
Hey, welcome back to the show. HSLAmmo.com is one of my sponsors. You know, I don't know a great way to tell you the advantages of purchasing your ammo from HSL other than Spencer Worthington is the founder of HSL Ammo. He is a businessman in Southern Utah who provides a tremendous amount of value for his community and a very useful commodity for those who either enjoy the shooting sports or understand how ammo is a wonderful store of value. I'm not ashamed to tell you, I think lead, copper, and brass are actually a great way to get into precious metals. If silver and gold are a bit rich for your blood, I promise you there's always some utility and always some value that people will hold for ammunition. So if you're looking for a way to, put aside a store of value, that's a great way to do it. Oh, and here's another bonus. Bullets don't require electricity. Go figure. I've got a link in the show notes, hslammo.com. It would make me very happy if you are in the market for some ammo, if you would do business with HSL Ammo. Well, the sheer amount of ways that we are expected to deny reality is mind-blowing. And the Good Citizen has a remarkable post on their Substack here, pushing maximum density. Bloated, gassy creatures in swimsuits and the denial of agency and reality. And we're looking at, this is the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue cover. And there's some from, years past. Look, I remember in high school, my buddies and I, we were always quite excited when the, Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue came out. And why not? I mean, they definitely picked the very best eye candy for that. But Swimsuit 2022, I'm trying to choose my words carefully, but these models are thick with two C's. So thick, in fact, that their cellulite makes the cover of corporate bikini rags. Says the Good Citizen. There's thickness and then there's thickness. Other people are so thick that they now believe morbid obesity is beautiful. Now, the Good Citizen says it's easier to believe a noble lie that feels good for the thick younger generations, yet helps nobody, than it is to put down a triple bacon cheeseburger and go move around. Bloated, gassy misery loves high-caloric, low-sustenance company, even in the form of other bloated, gassy loafers pushing maximum density. OMG, if like she can make the cover of Sports Illustrated, then like I totally can too, and I don't even need to stop supersizing my combo meals. Now the elusive, inspirational idea of aspirational beauty is now dead. Hard work and dedication through discipline and setting goals no longer matter. Anyone can be anything if we all agree to deny reality hard enough and make exceptions for the weakest among us because we forget strength and survival. We're only as tolerant as we are accepting the deficiencies of our weakest links. Instead of a rising tide to help everyone, let's scuttle all boats until we're all at the bottom of the sea. And so we rework our Western stage play to accommodate all actors while denying their agency and ignoring the hard truths of reality. Anyone can be a supermodel because nothing needs to be earned when meritocracy is dead. Even bloated, gassy cows can be supermodels. Think about the real supermodel who knows this but has to keep her mouth shut or risk never working again. Everybody plays their part. Throw one of those bloated, gassy cows in a bikini and work a little Photoshop magic for the latest Sports Illustrated bloated cows with penises in swimsuits edition, and you have the perfect visual of just how deep the present rot festers in the diseased bowels of Western civilization. Yes, some of them now have penises. Soon there will be trans models topless after top surgery with bulging prosthetic penises in their bikini bottoms. You think I'm joking, but give it a year. They'll expect us all to agree that this mentally confused person is incredibly brave and beautiful. When mass mental illness is mainstreamed and encouraged through over-medication and blind tolerance, then the operation continues until we all agree to be mentally confused. The entire Western world becomes one dysfunctional insane asylum until enough of us scream, enough! Cue the mob of brainwashed panty melts into their apopleptic screaming formations. What did you say? Don't be so intolerant. These top surgery scars are beautiful, and so is that fake penis. Somewhere in the dark, oak-paneled, cigar-smoky room, there are some three-piece suited businessmen having a hell of a laugh at our expense. When they're not busy planning our futures, they're testing the limits of our own acceleration toward collective insanity. Everything is one woke gag diversion after another. Now, the good citizen says, you might think this is an overreaction, but this is not a small thing. Denial of reality itself is an incredibly big problem. Now, in Russia, he says, they're not putting bloated, gassy cows with prosthetic penises in bikinis and calling them beautiful. Nor is China or India or Hungary or based Brazil. They have no time for it in Sri Lanka, where food is scarce and politicians' heads are being substituted for cricket balls. Even in holy Ukraine, they blocked the trans people from leaving the country, put a rifle in their hands, and sent them directly to the Donbass meat grinders. Now, if you were born a male but you lopped it off, go and fight for the oligarchs and Western war hyenas who are busy washing American taxpayer money through the Kiev laundromats. They're not even doing this obesity glorifying in Poland or France. In France, they don't sell a size larger than XL. And their XL is the equivalent of a U.S. large. They still fat shame in France because they know the value of embarrassing someone toward motivation. The good citizen says, when I lived in France, I went to see a general practitioner for a health issue. Before parting ways, he asked how my health was otherwise. Fine, I replied. Are you sure, he asked, because maybe you could lose some kilograms and be healthier. Loud record scratch noise. What? A doctor wanting their patient to be healthier while not forcing some deadly addictive pill on them? At the time, I'd let myself go to 196 pounds, but was lifting weights and jogging a few times a week, so didn't think anything of it. But my midsection was heavier, and I knew the doctor was right. The French doctor had fat-shamed me, and bless his soul for that, because over the next 2 months, I lost 18 pounds, most of it belly fat, and got fitter than I had been since my early 20s. Fat-shaming works. Glorifying morbid obesity and type 2 diabetes is something only a mentally ill society would do. Imagine the French doctor relocating to the States and telling a patient to get some exercise and lose some weight because they were less than 20 pounds overweight. He would have to do that with 90% of his patients. Hyper-offended nitwit takes out 60-megapixel camera phone in a luxury SUV, presses the streaming button on InstaShame to perform for their 12 followers. So, like, get this, everyone. Oh, my gosh. Guys, my new doctor, this French guy, just told me to, like, lose weight. I know, right? He, like, totally fat-shamed me, and I was just so, oh, my gosh, I can't even believe that just happened. I'm, like, literally in shock. Yeah, I'm going to call my lawyer. That's, like, just not okay with me. First, I'm totally starving, and Carl's Jr. sounds so good right now. All right, only in America, Canada, and the UK is morbid obesity being sold to young girls as beautiful. Sports Illustrated used to be a magazine for men. Especially the swimsuit issue. Do the young men today get turned on by looking at bloated, gassy cows in bikinis? While testosterone levels in all men have been plummeting by design for the depopulation agenda, poisoned water and foods, EMF, plastics, it just doesn't seem like evolutionary psychology would work that quickly at the whims of devious social engineers who want people to believe morbid obesity is not a disgusting turnoff. They still want us to believe that beauty is also relative. It's like that famous quote about beauty. In America, beauty is in the eye of the drive-through worker at the second window. I've not heard that one before, but I actually like it. Now, there's the whole denial of reality as well. We call them plus size models because we wouldn't dare call them fat models. The goal of fat models is to make sure their bread stays buttered, and they do this by eating. They don't go to the gym unless it's to pretend to work out while giving 20% effort and taking selfies. They must stay as fat as possible while playing along with the mentally ill people around them who constantly tell them how beautiful they are and feed their unhealthy pretenses. It's just another spoke in the wheel of reality denialism that allows new constructs to be built from the ashes of reality's burnt corpse. I know, this is some pretty straight-up truth. There is no sugarcoating on that red pill. Nonetheless, you will find a link to this article in the show notes at thebrianhydeshow.com. If you dare, click on it and give it a thorough read.
This is The Brian Hyde Show. This is The Brian Hyde Show.
Welcome back to the show. Want to give a shout out here to lifesavingfood.com. There's actually a link in my show notes. Click on it. Start shopping. I bet you'll find some kind of food storage or emergency preparedness that will just make you go, hey, I could sleep better at night if I knew that that was part of my preps. All right, I'm going to come back here for a moment to the Good Citizens Substack on pushing maximum density. And I know, I'm overweight, so I'm not pointing a finger at anybody that shouldn't be pointed back at me. I'm probably carrying 40 pounds more of me than I should. But I agree with what the Good Citizen is pointing out here, that we are being conditioned into denying reality when you see people who are, and I mean literally morbidly obese, way beyond just, yeah, they're carrying a few extra pounds. I mean, they're like really carrying a lot of extra weight. And we're told, this is beautiful, this is healthy. That's not an invitation to go around, you know, picking on people or fat-shaming people. But why are we supposed to pretend that this is normal? In the same vein that we're supposed to pretend that, you know, people who are mutilating their bodies, cutting off their sex organs, removing their breasts and whatnot to try to be, you know, this trans individual, we're supposed to pretend that that's normal too. Again, I mean no unkindness because I think my opinion is these are people who are dealing with some kind of mental trauma. And I don't mean that in the sense that they ought to be locked away in an asylum. They deserve compassion. They have value. They are God's children just as much as you and I are. And they deserve love and support. But is it really loving and supporting someone to play into a deluded state of mind? Would you agree with a person who has anorexia? Oh, I'm so fat, even as they're wasting away to skin and bones. Yeah, you're right. You could stand to lose a little bit more weight. Would you do that just for the sake of assuaging their feelings? Of course not. Back to the article here. The Good Citizen says this is all just another spoke in the wheel of reality denialism. The cultural Soviets are everywhere meddling with social constructs that propagate, insert something harmful but completely fabricated for their ideological agenda here. If they're not grooming and confusing children with gender pronouns and biological denialism, they're telling them it's okay to be fat or even obese. All science is subverted for tolerance of everything in service to ideological indoctrination. So, bloated, gassy cows in bikinis example. Traditional beauty standards propagate cis-heteronormative, toxic masculine standards of patriarchal culture and subjugate women by denying them full autonomy over their bodies. Okay, here's the common sense psycho-ideological translation. It's okay to be a fat cow, ladies. You're still beautiful because beauty comes in all sizes, even in size type 2. In fact, the uglier you make yourself, the harder you stick it to the toxic masculine patriarchy, and the more liberated you will be. The result? Piercings, tattoos, dedicated ugliness, gender bending, sexual confusion, and obesity accepted as beauty. If I were a conspiracy-minded fellow, I might say the population controllers love this because it means less attractive females for the few males remaining who have sufficient testosterone levels to even want to procreate. And so movements like Men Going Their Own Way are born and reproduction rates fall below replacement levels for two generations. And don't think I'm giving a pass to the fat men out there, ladies. He says, I see them too, but the mentally ill culture movers aren't glorifying their obesity at the behest of global management. Only their pregnancies. tolerance of the intolerable is the suicide of civilizations. That's according to T. Good Charlie. Making both sexes fat, lazy, drugged up, passive, and always sick is a great way to control the population. Mess with the food supplies, crops, water, the air, and blast everyone with electromagnetic frequencies like 5G that slowly damage their biological cellular function, and it's a cocktail recipe made in the Club of Rome kitchen. Then there's the denial of agency. And this part really spoke to me. To the mentally ill Borg, denying an individual agency allows that individual to be subsumed by group identity. Group identity labels become key signifiers for ideological conformity. Each group is a victim of traditional Western culture. Women are victims of the dominant male patriarchy. Blacks and Latinos are poor victims of white racist culture. Everything that needs to be destroyed can be through creating group identities and blaming their oppression on other groups. This is merely power shifting disguised as altruism and tolerance. Each group is used by those who want more power. For neoliberals and progressives, the groups are tools that are easy to manipulate, control, subjugate, and exploit by denying each individual's agency within the group. They then vote for their slave masters every chance they get while celebrating their chains or their victimhood and becoming missionaries who spread their gospel propaganda to transform others into slaves by getting them to deny their agency too. By denying agency, obesity is not the fault of the individual. It's the culture of cheap fast food. It's just a part of modern life. It's the fault of the advertising industry, which creates unrealistic beauty standards. And it's a lack of education about healthy eating. This last one is a favorite of diet gurus who for 40 years have made billions educating the masses with special diets and plans. Very few offer tough, honest love by telling people the truth. The first step in transforming oneself toward a solution is accepting full responsibility for the problem. Nobody has the guts for honesty and tough love, so it's never the fault of the individual who consumes more calories than they exert through movement and exercise. Those supreme nacho platters and double stuffed pizzas just magically went down my gullet. I don't know how those three bear claws ended up in my stomach. Denial of responsibility means we all have to pretend the morbidly obese are victims of everything else except their own poor choices. By calling the morbidly obese beautiful, we are socially assisting their slow suicide while culturally assisting ours as well. Global management loves it when people help them by simultaneously denying reality and agency and dying faster. He says, a few weeks ago, while going for drinks with a Polish friend, she needed to stop by her grandmother's place to check on her. We had taken a river walk, and it was on the way toward the center of town. Grandmother's 85 and lives alone in a one-bedroom apartment that hasn't seen renovation since Khrushchev ruled the region via whatever Polish communist leader was in power at the time. While she checked on her grandmother, I politely asked to use the restroom. As I'm washing up, I notice the medicine cabinet has no mirror or door, and the shelves are pretty empty. Now, in the States, you usually see about 20 orange bottles in an octogenarian's medicine cabinet. I got curious and checked the drawers and under the sink. Nothing. I went snooping around and checked the bedroom nightstands and drawers. Nothing. When I got back to the kitchen, I did some more light snooping where I could. Nothing. While sipping vodka and chatting with grandmother via my friend translating, I asked about COVID and asked if she feared getting ill and told her she seemed pretty healthy before eventually asking if she took any medications. 85 years old, still strong as an ox, and not on any prescription medications. In fact, the last prescription she filled was for a toe fungus years ago. None of those bloated, gassy models in bikinis will live to see 55, let alone 85. Most of them probably take more prescription medications at 25 than my friend's grandmother. But hey, let's all pretend type 2 diabetes is fierce and beautiful. This endless merry-go-round pushing maximum density through thickness and thickness is sure to benefit someone. Who could it be? The answer is a bunch of dicks laughing at all of us in cigar-smoky rooms. I should probably offer this disclaimer. This contains some kind of adult themes that kids should never listen to. Sorry, I should have done that at the beginning. No, this is pretty blunt. And as a person who's carrying, again, some extra weight, I hope this isn't feeling like a slap in the face to those who have weight issues. My wife and I have both, you know, we've been married now for 31, almost 32 years. And, you know, as we look at ourselves in the mirror, we're like, dang, time and gravity, they're really taking a toll on both of us. And I'm going to go so far as to say that, you know, everybody suffers that fate to some degree. To me, one of the saddest things that you'll see are the movie stars who, you know, they get up there in age and they're not willing to let time have its way. So plastic surgery and whatever it takes to maintain that illusion of beauty. Finally, they become almost a cartoon caricature of themselves. That's sad. There's something to be said for aging gracefully. But the crux of what the good citizen is saying here, that we are told to look at things that are not healthy, whether it be a person's weight, whether it be a person mutilating themselves sexually to try to fill some mental problem of how they see themselves. None of this is healthy. But if you say that, you are accused of being a bigot. You're accused of being the worst possible human being. But you have a choice to make here. I mean, do you just go along? Do you pretend, oh, the emperor's new clothes? Yes, why, they are the prettiest thing I've ever seen. Or do you just keep your mouth shut and hope nobody notices that you're like aghast? Ugh. Or do you speak the truth? You don't have to speak it harshly, but, you know, if you give me the choice between, look, you either hold to reality or you say what we tell you to say, I'm going to hold to reality. I don't care how painful it gets.
This is the Brian Hyde Show. This is the Brian Hyde Show.
All right, welcome back to the show. And a quick shout out here to the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage, located in St. George, Utah at 619 South Bluff Street. Heather's NMLS ID is 715386. Patriot Home Mortgage is an equal housing opportunity lender. You can click on the email link I provide in my show notes under the sponsors section. You can also call her at 435-703-4522. Why the Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage? Simply this. Heather has decades of experience in the lending industry. If you need a loan, a home loan, a reverse mortgage, a traditional loan, VA loan, whatever it may be, she can get the job done and done quickly. Plain and simple. The Heather Turner team at Patriot Home Mortgage. Very happy to have her as a sponsor of the show. Okay, two quick articles I want to touch on in the closing segment here. Do you ever feel obligated to do something just because, or when, let me ask it this way. Do you feel obligated to do something when the person telling you, hey, you need to do this, is someone you don't trust? Because it depends on who's saying it, right? If it's someone in a position of supposed authority, well, I guess I kind of have to, whether I trust him or not. Do you really? Alan J. Pfeiffer outlines the collapse of trust in our society. And he says, looking at the issues facing our country, there seems to be something pernicious for which we don't seem to know what to do to correct the downward trajectory shaking us to our core. Now, the issue at play now is that the majority of Americans have lost trust in our ability to govern, and also whether our leaders are even telling us the truth or if we're simply being manipulated. In fact, he provides a few examples that are emblematic of the breadth and depth of the issues we face. So, for instance, on the Supreme Court leaker, let's not deal with the leak itself, just the fact that the sanctity of the court was broken. No one seems to want to do anything about it and the likely effect it will have on future deliberations and decisions. Why has this traitor not been outed? And he says, I say traitor because the individual wants to effectively substitute his or her opinion over that of the Supreme Court. Think about that for a moment. My understanding is that the list of suspects contains about 40 individuals, 3 weeks in, and the suspect has not been identified. That person must be found and outed. The Supreme Court cannot stand if we as a country lose faith in the deliberative process, which is foundational to the functioning of our country. That's what's really on the line. All right, here's another example. Baby formula. The closing of the Abbott facility was a botched job. Everyone knew 40% of the formula produced in the U.S. came from a single plant. Now, we might forgive the failure of forethought in not diversifying our supply years ago. But this complete breakdown of responsibility by the FDA and the president through his staff for not having raised the alarm as week by week the problems grew worse 4 months before the plant closing is hard to take. There was a heads up that this might happen back in September of 2021, and it would have been reasonable to commence planning for a shortage of baby formula right then. Hungry babies in America are a new low for our country, but it comes on the heels of one crisis after another. Then there's the war in Ukraine. Intelligence experts claim they warned the administration that Russia was going to attack in April of 2021. We rewarded every minor withdrawal or diminishment of tensions with a pat on Putin's back. Russian strategy was effective in keeping the U.S. and its allies sleeping for too long. Instead of sending lethal weapons in quantity, we sent mostly non-lethal aid to Ukraine before the war's commencement. Even after Ukraine was brutally attacked in a massive combined arms invasion, we sent mixed messages to the Russians who believe we lack the resolve to do what it takes to win. This ambiguity is how world wars start. This is a huge breach of trust in how Americans perceive the effectiveness of our leaders. Now, I'm going to differ from Mr. Pfeiffer on this one. Because it's not a matter of, well, if the U.S. would have got more involved and sent more lethal weapons sooner, the U.S. government is very much responsible for the hostilities currently going on in Ukraine because they have enabled the Ukrainian government. They helped with the overthrow of its democratically elected president back in 2014. They have played a role in exacerbating the hostilities which have existed between Ukraine and Russia for quite some time. And they've been endlessly poking the bear ever since that time and will likely do so right up until there's some kind of nuclear exchange. I'm not a fan of Russia's leadership. I'm certainly not a fan of our own leadership. And I reiterate again, there are no good guys in this scenario. And since when is it the U.S.'s job to get in and mediate a border dispute between Russia and its next-door neighbor? They're making it their business. If you maintain, well, it is our business because we have to be a force for good in the world, I hope you can keep that broad perspective when it's your sons and your daughters being sent off to die for something that has nothing whatsoever to do with our freedoms. Then there's the sky-high cost of energy. Why do we have a shortage of energy? And are we being told the truth? The salient question every American should ask is, have they been deceived by the president? Old Circleback Saki was asked endlessly why we're producing less energy even today. Pre-pandemic, under Trump, the U.S. was producing a record 13 million barrels of oil per day, and we were even exporting it. Production fell 3 million barrels per day due to slack in demand. Production's now back up to 11.6 million barrels per day, but it's not accelerating. Why? Could the underlying reason be the simple truth that Biden articulated in 2019? I want you to look at my eyes. I guarantee you we're going to end fossil fuel. Is he just keeping his promises and lying to the rest of us? My take is simple, says Mr. Pfeiffer. He wants high prices and cares not about damage to the American family and its position in the world to support his Green New Deal initiatives. There are so many basic issues that are similar to those above and just as disheartening: immigration, woke policies, education, COVID, even setting one race against another. We could go on seemingly endlessly. Is it any wonder we don't trust our government, its leaders, policies, and even its good intentions any longer? We have arrived at a point that appears intentional. The utter disregard for breaking the sacred bond between ordinary Americans and their leadership, fealty to the principles and practices of a nation that has stood for good, stood for a better tomorrow, and been that beacon of hope to the entire world, is now in doubt. Now, again, this is an article from Alan J. Pfeiffer. I'll link to it so you can check it out for yourself. One final note here, and I'm just going to touch on a couple of things. When I want a real, no-crud assessment of what's going on in the world, James Howard Kunstler is one of my go-to sources. And he not only does a very good job of connecting the dots, but he does it with a pretty fair amount of humor as well. He says, now we're finding out the hard way how much daily life must change and is changing. and how disorderly that process is in every way, from the imperative daily life adjustments to our spiritual attitudes about them. He says, when I wrote The Long Emergency nearly 20 years ago, I never thought that once it got going, our government would work so hard to make it worse. He says, my theory then was just that government would become increasingly bloated, ineffectual, impotent, and uncomprehending of the forces converging to undermine our advanced techno-industrial societies. What I didn't imagine was that government would bring such ostentatious stupidity to it. Now, obviously, there was some recognition that ominous changes are coming down. Otherwise, we wouldn't have heard so much chatter about alt-energy, sustainable growth, green this and that. But the chatter was more symptomatic of wishful thinking for at least a couple of reasons. Mostly, it ignored the laws of physics, despite the fact that so many people involved in enterprises such as wind and solar energy were science and tech mavens. And number two, there was a dumb assumption that the general shape and scale of daily life would remain as it has been. In other words, that we could still run suburbia, the giant cities, Disney World, Walmart, the U.S. military, and the interstate highway system just the way they were already set up, only by means other than oil and gas. But he says, now we're finding out the hard way how much daily life must change and is changing, and just how disorderly that process is in every way, from the imperative personal adjustments to our spiritual attitudes about them. As with so many things in history, this disorder expresses itself strangely, even prankishly, as if God were a practical joker. Who would have imagined that our politics would become so deranged? That there would be battles over teaching oral sex in the fifth grade? That the CDC would keep pushing vaccines that obviously don't work? And that so many people would still take them? That stealing stuff under $1,000 in value wouldn't merit prosecution? That riots featuring arson and looting are mostly peaceful? That we'd spend $50 billion halfway around the world to defend the borders of another country while ignoring the defense of our own borders? That financially beset Americans would spend their dwindling cash on tattoos? Well, you get the idea. The problems are real. He actually has a very interesting solution that he outlines, you know, for at least some of the problems in this article. I'm not going to give you the spoiler, but I'm going to encourage you. Click on the link I provide in my show notes. You can access them at thebrianhydeshow.com. Yep, we got some tough stuff ahead of us. Difficult decisions to make. Challenging circumstances. Just remember, we are up to this task. But you got to be willing to question the narrative and, if necessary, to march to the beat of your own drum.
This is The Brian Hyde Show.